Want to be a part of the podcast network that actually likes things? Well, now you can join the Front Row Network by supporting us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/frontrownetwork to unlock all of the dozens of special perks that come from being one of our patrons, including exclusive episodes, on-air shoutouts, Ask Me Anything sessions, and even the ability to guest star on an episode of your choosing. That's right. Go to patreon.com/frontrownetwork to unlock all these special features with tiers starting as low as $1 a month. What, are we nuts? Of course we are. You've heard our shows. $1 a month can get you so much bonus content that you will not know what to do with it. So go to, once again, to patreon.com/frontrownetwork to join up with us. And hey, we will see you in the front row.
The door that finally opens with life flooding in, spilling
out. Well, hello everybody out there in podcast land, and welcome to another episode of Flashbacks Presents Raised by Wolves. This spinoff series is different than our normal structure. Normally, we break down the movies of our past and how they've influenced current pop culture and events. And today, we're going to continue to flip the script and look at a brand new show that came out on HBO Max and has been heavily influenced by many movies we have and will cover on Front Row Flashbacks. Today, we're going to break down episodes 7 and 8 of Raised by Wolves and talk about the pop culture influences that this show proudly wears on its shoulder and about the greater discussion of artificial intelligence and our reliance on technology. Along with me on this wild ride is my co-host and the android academic of this operation, Aaron McCabe. What's going on?
Oh, Jay, still got a broken refrigerator. We're four episodes in. Refrigerator's still broken. Got a kid who's throwing up. But otherwise, I'm A-okay. How are you?
Good. I probably asked, did you kick it? Did you try to kick it?
Did you unplug the refrigerator? Plug it back in. Yeah, I spent a long period of time on the phone with a woman who was in customer service, who was rattling off the manual to me on all the things I should do. I'm like, done it, did it. Watch that YouTube video. Yep, already tried it. Send out a part.
Send out the right Android to get it fixed.
Send out the right Android, exactly. I need an Android fridge.
Yeah. Well, I'm, life's going good. I did a Zoom class for the last 4 days. I'm telling 8 hour Zooms. So Let's Zoom this podcast. How about that?
Zoom right to it. Yeah. You want to get right into the breakdown?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So we're talking about episode 7 and 8 tonight. We're getting into, episode 7 first, which is Faces. And so what takes place now, I was telling you before we started recording, these two episodes kind of like, they kind of mix and run into each other a lot for me in a good way. But still, if I start to mess some things up, I feel like, cause it was both, there was a lot of overlap. Okay. So in episode 7, with mother held captive and powerless by the Mithraic and father gets reprogrammed, Campion is forced to choose whether to resist the Mithraic or ally himself with them. So they kind of give him a choice on for him to be baptized and join them, or basically he gets to be an outcast. And there's this whole weird dynamic within the religion that like no one can touch him because he's unclean. And Paul's kind of struggling with that because they're friends. So we kind of get into that. Marcus is disturbed to discover that Mother is aware of his true identity, and Marcus really kind of unravels, like Mother really gets to him in a way while she's being held captive. That's a pretty interesting scene. Campion now starts to begin to experience visions of Tally. So they're all starting to, many of the members of the cast are starting to experience visions of Tally. And as Marcus attempts to destroy Mother once and for all, he finds himself grappling with not only the voice in his head, but the tenuous hold on his leadership of the Mithraic, on his relationships with now Sue and Paul, and his own sanity. He's really on the struggle bus in this episode. So let's get into it. Did I miss anything?
No, I don't. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it was a pretty good synopsis. Yeah, there's some cool stuff. And one of the scenes you mentioned between Mother and Marcus is probably my favorite scene of the show so far. I was like really captivated by that. But before that, you know, there's one point where Campion is interacting with Marcus and the actions he's taken. And he just Campion screams at him. Do any of you ever tell the truth? Right, which is interesting, right? The atheist is posing that to the Mithraic. And Marcus's response, kind of mumbled, was, "Not really, kid," which I thought was very open of him and kind of talking about where his, you know, he's hitting this weird mental health breaking point where he's not sure if he's hearing voices, but he sure thinks he is. Am I an atheist? Am I Mithraic? Am I the chosen one? You know, so there's some, this is very much to me an episode that seems like a biblical parable in a lot of ways that I really, in several ways, which I actually have other notes on. So I thought that was an interesting part, just his openness with Campion. And, I think it was too, from the writer's perspective, a bit of a dig on religion, you know, pretty much. I think that was targeted at most religions using their religion to make their own, to benefit themselves, not necessarily to be in line with their religion.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that what they're saying is necessarily, the religion or the spirituality itself is not what could be true, but maybe using or leveraging the spiritual practices and the mythology of it and the dogma of it to behoove their own self-interests.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, especially, so I like to take that into that scene where they have Mother captured. She's tied up. She's not just tied up. They got her arms and her legs, and it is very intentionally staged in a Christ-like pose, right? She's very much in a crucifixion-looking pose, the way they have her strung up, which I think goes into some of the pair. I think Marcus and Mother are each kind of living out their own parable in some way. And I don't know where it's going, but I think, you know, that's what we were supposed to get from that. But Marcus and Mother meeting, you know, like you said in your synopsis, she knows, she can see the scars from his reconstructive surgery. She can see his tattoo that identifies him not just as a child soldier in the atheist military, but what unit he was in. Just from her programming, being able to see all that stuff. But I wrote in my notes, Mother definitely received the Hannibal Lecter programming in that scene. That was
oh man,
definitely, right? Hannibal and Clarice level discussion going on, and she shook him with just words, and it was
yes,
very cool. And I think some of that too is that gender dynamics we've talked about too, like. I think it's very intentional that it was a role reversal from that movie, right? It was a woman making him feel that way, where he's been the tough guy and the one making the logical decisions, the leader of the group, and it was a woman that brought him down, and all she used was words. It wasn't her super necromancer powers. And I just, every bit of that scene was just, both actors were phenomenal in it, and that was an awesome scene.
It was. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of, I don't know if anyone remembers, like, Dane Cook released, you know, his whole stand-up comedy in there. You could get the DVD, like, back in, like, 2004 or 5. And I remember this skit where it was like, oh, you got, do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm just, you were a total Dane Cook fangirl, weren't you?
I thought he was funny. I did think he was funny, and he was cute. I'm not gonna lie.
There it is.
Oh my God. Now we're on like camera with each other. He can see me turning red. Oh my God. No, but there was a bit with Dane Cook where he was talking about like when a female and male are fighting like together, you know, in a relationship. And like, he's like, the woman takes three steps, turns around and goes, your father was stupid. And then like turns around and walks out of the room. And it's like, that seed grows into a bomb. And all of a sudden it's like 36 hours later. And he's like, my dad was a great man. Like, he's like, women just have a way of like getting into their heads with words. And I thought, like, really, like, she really kept her composure, and she did. She just was like, mm-hmm, okay, let me go after you in this way. And that almost made it worse, like how her Android programming or abilities played, you know, in her favor in that moment, because she went emotionless. So, and for me, that pose seemed, definitely the Christ-like for me, because the like legs were split, very much like medieval torture position too. So like the Kingdom of God reference kind of came back to me, you know, it's like when you're getting people to, I don't know, do they do that? Did they torture people to get them to convert to, is that what happened in the Crusades?
I'm sure it did. I mean, right. How else are you going to get people to do what you want them to do?
Yeah.
That's a Tony Soprano line right there.
There you go.
Every part of that scene just felt very intentional. To me, that was the most impactful scene since anything from the first couple of episodes. And though that, you know, the first two episodes had a masterclass, you know, heading it up, and you get to do the intro, which is kind of the fun stuff. So, you know, Ridley Scott was definitely a few leagues above everybody else so far, those episodes, I think. But this scene, This scene really jumped it up a notch for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then aside from them too, we also had Sue kind of dealing with her issues. She's not dealing well with Marcus's problems. Nor his attitude and approach to things.
Right.
And she is mad, man. She's pissed, about a lot of things. Very mad about, trying to turn Paul into a soldier still. You know, we've kind of been talking about that for a few episodes, but she's on a tear, and she's ready to get Paul and her and Marcus just away from everybody. And I felt like there came a point where she's just like so full of revenge and anger that like, I don't think she's thinking clearly about like, you are on an undiscovered planet with no resources and you want to run away from resources that you know. And that's like, she's so mad at the Mithraic. She hates him so much. And she has a line that now we can talk about. There's a 9-page comic we've mentioned. Aaron has read it now, so we'll talk about it. But she blames the Mithraic for the destruction of Earth. She says they destroyed Earth.
Yeah.
But the writer of the show made, just like I said, it's a 9-page. It's free. You can look it up and read it. Take you about 5 minutes. But they cram a lot of exposition in that 5 minutes.
Yeah.
We find out why the necromancers are made. We don't find out how, you know, and they even make commentary on the episode 8 about that. But we find out the why, and that's basically anybody that does not convert to the Mithraic religion and get baptized and accept Saul as their savior. They're there to cleanse and basically destroy. But we find out. The atheists, the only way they can find to try to defeat the necromancers were nuclear weapons. And they tried to blast them away with nuclear weapons, which is actually what destroyed the Earth. So I thought it was very interesting. She blamed the Mithraic. And I think there's probably a line of logic where you could say, yeah, the nuclear weapons did it because that's the only thing we could think to do.
Right.
But I thought that was interesting, just how vengeful and rageful she was this episode.
Well, and she's in, you know, for her, she's her, like, she's become a mother to Paul, and like, it's not her biological child, but this, in these episodes where now, like, they've gotten to know this kid over 13 years in stasis, and now they have him in real life, but, you know, obviously they got woken up out of it. Now she has him in real life. And after this 13-year relationship, she's so invested. I think what you're seeing as well, and then they're doing a great job of it, is like, you've got a woman who is supposed to be thinking the logical line of thought, like a soldier, right? Like you're saying, you're like, logistically, this does not make sense. But what you're seeing is like, it's like that maternal instinct of like, I need to save my child. I need to make my child safe, and I don't care. I'll figure the rest out later kind of thing. And how that, you're right, it doesn't always work out well. Like there has to be a balance between the two in order for it to work out. But like, yeah, it's fascinating how this is all coming together now. Like Marcus is, it's like, he's flipped a switch. He's like crazy town. She's probably, you know, like they've been in wars and they've been in battles before, and they kind of get into that in these episodes, yet still you're seeing this very emotionally volatile side from both of them that they probably also had to repress as far as survival goes in other situations in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's definitely, it's definitely full mama bear mode.
Yeah.
And I believe she, and I believe Marcus too. I think they genuinely love Paul and now think of him as a son. I know some of Marcus's actions haven't been great, but way early on, after he gets taken out and he comes back to consciousness, the first question he asks, where's Paul? So I do think he has genuine feelings. I think it was just, he's got voices in his head. He's taking command. People are challenging that command still in some ways.
Right.
But he holds, you know, they're starting to pick at each other too. Cause she's like, I'm doing this. I'm taking Paul. I'm going. And he's like, you're nothing without me. The only reason you're alive is because of me. I kept you alive. I kept everybody alive.
Right.
That's why you're not leaving. You know, he really held that against her and over her and tried to lord it over. She still wasn't really having it. And that, It gets more into that in the next episode a little bit. But another dynamic that was happening also at the same time is Tempest.
Right.
And her attitude towards mother and father versus her people, put that in air quotes, the Mithraic.
Yeah.
And some of the children feel like they were kids. It's a lot of her and Hunter. And the other kids kind of look up to Tempest, and they don't really like Hunter because, as we've said before, he's some like cleric type of birthline. Yeah. He's a lazy bum that runs his mouth is what he is.
He is. He's that. He reminds me of the guy who was in charge before Marcus burned him. But like kind of that, like, well, I am the highest ranking officer, like really using and leveraging the benefits of being in the upper echelon of the caste system. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like where you're like, oh, you're the reason people don't like religion. We're gonna, you know, it's like so cringy.
You're the guy. You're the reason. Yeah. 100%. And yeah. Tempest is like, hey bro, I don't know if you're aware, like, almost all our people have been killed. So that means nothing now. Like it means nothing. So
right.
Go to hell. And all the kids are kind of on board, but he says, man, we were kidnapped. What are you guys talking about? And she argues that mother and father didn't kidnap them. They saved them.
Right.
And then there's a bit of an argument. All the kids are kind of torn on that. It's really interesting to me to see how they've been quote unquote saved by their people, yet they also are feeling this really big guilt about what happened to father getting reprogrammed.
I know.
Like all of them. All of them want father back.
Oh my God. This was really heartbreaking for me. I was like, oh, when Vita, little Vita comes up to him and goes to grab his hand and says, father, and sneaks her little hand right into his. And he looks down at her as this new reprogrammed and service model android and says, remove yourself from my hand, child. You'll hinder my performance. So cold. I was like, oh, it was, and she was heartbroken. Like even Holly, who really usually sides with Hunter and like with the Mithraic, was like even taken aback. Like it's, oh, it's, this one's been brutal, brutal.
Yeah, it's very upset. Father's not father anymore.
I know. What's with the Twitch? What do you think the Twitch is about?
Or is he? Or is he father? Well, we find out later. Another thing going on with Campion, you know, you mentioned they wanted to, they said, you can either get baptized under the light of Saul, or you can be an atheist and we'll shun you and you're on your own. Good luck, pal. And Tempest was like, I get it. I also don't believe, but you need to survive. So just do it. Just do
right.
it. He was going to until he realized the temple they set up, they had used the grave markers for his siblings as the building material. And he didn't like that. He did not react well. And he was ready to go on a tear and do his best to escape. And, you know, I wrote in my notes, you moved the headstones, but you didn't move the bodies. Although that has absolutely nothing to do with this scene. It's what popped into my head immediately, was from Poltergeist. But yeah, that was that. And then when he does that, they throw him back into, I guess we'll call it solitary confinement, into the, one of the, I guess like it's a pantry building, right? Where I think they were keeping some of the food
that
we're harvesting until they found out it was radioactive. And then who does he see in there? Tally. Again, what the hell?
Everybody with Tally. And you know what's interesting? It's like, it's not just him, right? Like even the Mithraic child, Vita, like she's seen Tally. She knows Tally. So it's like, why are they all seeing Tally? I'm like, is this it? Are we getting ghosts? Because Tally, the ghost of Tally or the vision of Tally says, Campion, we missed you.
Yeah.
Like, are there more?
Yeah. It's getting interesting. I don't know what the hell's going on with that. And it's not just the children. Father saw Tally too.
Right.
When he was father. Right. So even an android saw her. So there's... I think there's going to be a much more scientific explanation.
Yes.
But that in air quotes too, because I don't know how scientific it would be, but a more sci-fi explanation than a more supernatural explanation. But I don't know. They're really making you question everything with
this
supernatural. Is this Saul? Is this religion? Or is this something else? And
right.
I'm intrigued to find out. Last couple things I have, and whatever you got too, but you mentioned the finger, father's finger. Now he's been reprogrammed. His index finger keeps twitching, keeps twitching. And then
they call him trigger finger, right?
Yeah. Cause he keeps knocking stuff over with his twitchy finger.
Yeah.
What do you think it is?
When I was watching it, it kept doing it and they kept bringing attention to it. So I was like, it's got to be Morse code. Like there's something in me going like there's a part of him that's trying to communicate. Why am I blinking on like, what is that from? That's from something. There's something I'm flashing back to that reminds me and I can't think of what it is. And I couldn't then and I can't now. Right.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a trope that we see in things where like people are kidnapped or they're on TV and they use their finger and tap the Morse code and stuff like that.
Yeah. So,
to me, part of me was like, might be Morse code. Part of me too is just like, maybe he's not right. Maybe.
Oh my God. I know what it is. I'm thinking of.
What is it?
It's so weird. Does anything I say sound weird anymore? I don't know.
Oh, literally everything, but keep going.
Do you remember the Metallica music video for, was it One? It's a guy with locked-in syndrome.
I do not.
Such a weirdo.
Well, I just, you know, you were in like probably junior high when that happened. I was still like crawling, so I don't.
You know what?
You've aged Lou's so much better, though.
Lou's still older than me, okay? Lou's still older than me.
No, I don't. I don't know that I've ever seen that video, but okay. So.
Yeah, but like, I think there's like, you're right. It's a trope we see. It's also, it's like people are locked in, or like they're locked into their bodies and they can't move, but they can move. Maybe it's a little bit of, a little bit of Kill Bill, right? Like move your toe, like kind of thing. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Hey. That to me, more than the Morse code though, that was like, I feel like because he was starting to evolve, right? Mm. Beyond programming.
Yeah.
And I thought like, it felt like to me, it's like, no matter how much they reprogram him, like part of him is in there and he's fighting to get out or hoping. I like the idea of that.
I just had something that kind of popped in when you said that. It's like, is there a metaphor going on too for like, is there like a metaphor going on like when you've had regime changes in countries or after wars where you have people go through re-education camps? Mm. Like, is this some sort of metaphor for like, yeah, you can reprogram people or entities, but they're, maybe their base programming or like part of them still always resides within.
Yeah. Winter Soldier style.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. Could be that. I think that would make sense. And then at the end, right, Marcus tells father, reprogrammed father, to grab the tied up mother and they're going to go out in the woods and he's going to take care of her. And yeah. That's what Marcus tells everybody. People, oh, do you need some help? No, I got it. And then as he does it, you know, she's tied to a rope. And then Marcus sees a vision of himself before his surgery. And then they have a knife fight. So Marcus with plastic surgery, current Marcus plus fights past Marcus in the middle of the woods with a knife. And we don't, you know, like, why is that happening? What is happening?
Yeah, I got a little confusing. I'm like, okay, I'm like, I get he's like coming out with his future or his past self. And I don't know, maybe that fits in with the rest of the episode, like with the reprogramming of father. You know what I mean?
Trying to kill his old self.
Right, you know, Caleb.
To not be the atheist anymore. But then what we find out was some sort of hallucination because he stabbed himself with the knife.
Right.
His knife's covered in his blood and he slashes himself and he goes down. At the same time this is happening, father, I don't remember if it was on purpose or reluctantly, pushes mother into one of those holes. But right. He had his finger that was all twitchy, tied a rope around it, and he's holding her with his twitchy finger from falling in. She climbs out. They kind of have a moment. You know, father doesn't really say anything, you know, because he's still kind of reprogrammed, but they have like a moment where she looks at him, says, thank you, I'll come back, I'll save you all. And she runs off and he just lets her.
Yeah.
And that was the end of the episode. And that's where we're like, ooh, is the twitchy finger? I think that twitchy finger's father. I think he's still in there.
Aww.
And I liked that too, that mini moment that they had.
I did too.
Anything else on episode 7?
No, I did have a question. Do you think, okay, Lucius is the soldier who's like very, obviously very into his religion. Do you think he's falling? Like, do you think he trusts Marcus as much as he's letting on? He's very willing to like run out there and be like, let me help you. Let me do things. And like very matter of factly, like, and like very emphatic about it. But I feel like there's a little, when he's like, oh, let me come with you. Like, I think at face value, he's showing that, like, he's like, okay, he's a good soldier. He'll listen and he'll fall in the line. But I think he's starting to question things. What do you think?
I think he's starting to question things. But I would also say he's the one that made the push for Marcus to be in charge.
That's
true. Remember, the number two said, oh, I'm number two, so therefore I must take power. And the guy's like, what are you talking about, lady? He just melted that guy with fire from the power of Saul. Why would you be in charge? No, that was him. He was the one who, well, he didn't quite say it that way, but he was the one that pushed for Marcus to take charge. But I do think he questions things like, why didn't he kill Mother sooner? Why didn't he kill the Mithraic rapist guy? And that guy's still alive, right? He died. If he died, it was very not brought out. So they just maybe didn't show him this episode.
That's true. That's a good point.
So I think you're right. I think he is questioning things, but I also think what he saw him do to Ambrose, which, right, we don't even know what he did.
Right.
Like, right. But he used that big rock, Stargate rock thing to light the guy on, or Fifth Element rock. That's what. To light the guy on fire. So I think that's always right back here for that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. On episode 8, Mass. In episode 8, we find that Marcus's erratic shift towards his devotion to Saul starts to push away Sue and Paul. So they start kind of doing the whole, like, nervous laugh, like, yeah, no, we totally love you, Dad/Marcus. Like, everything's fine, but they're really secretly making plans to try to get the F away from him. And Marcus is becoming kind of this, like, he's kind of becoming this, like, goofy religious fanatic. this is a very interesting story arc. Mother believes she is experiencing a malfunction and ends up going to the Mithraic Ark Heaven and trying to find, like, their surgical androids to repair her. And she's confronted with some shocking news. We'll get into that. And the Mithraic children kind of start to make some of their own choices. You know, you've got Paul starting to question things, wanting to run away with Sue. You've got Vita wanting to go with, or Paul wanting to rescue Campion and have them go with, and then Vita wants to go with them. They want to go find Tempest. Tempest is already gone. Holly, who's one of the older girls, she kind of still wants to stay, but at the end makes the decision to, she make the decision to leave? I can't remember. Did she stay? Hunter's just, he's into the Mithraic. He's got it too good. He's not leaving anywhere. He's fully indoctrinated.
Yeah. I don't remember.
Holly goes with them.
Yes. The younger two do.
Yeah. Yes. She's kind of a fair weather fan. I'm not going to lie. Like, she's not as strong in her convictions as some of the other kids are. And that's fine. But she's kind of like
a survivor.
You survive. Sometimes that's what you got to do. Does that about sum it up? I didn't want to give away too much with Mother because I think we're gonna really get into it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe save that to the end of the discussion. What do you think?
Yeah,
cover some of the other stuff. There was one thing in this episode I thought was interesting because it did involve Hunter, and I think you're right. He does like the Mithraic. But there was a point where, right, he does kind of find out that that twitchy thing and father's finger is Morse code.
Yeah.
All he was messaging was, like, some religious, you know, motto.
It was soul is light.
Yeah. So it's not really anything. Like, he's like, oh, that's it. And then he says, I kind of thought part of you was still in there. But he seemed, like, disappointed.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a weird reaction. Like, you're the reason he's this way, and all you've done is hate on him and Mother. So I thought that was a weird reaction that he had, maybe, you know, because he's young. He's not, you know, he's a teenager still.
Right.
So no matter how much in his conviction is, you know, there's some things happening that makes, you know, he's going to start to question stuff. So
yeah,
I thought that was interesting that that happened. And then when Mother goes to the ship to find the surgical androids, which I loved their design. They were kind of creepy.
They were creepy.
I loved it. And I definitely know what they made me think of. I don't even know if it's actually in the movie I think of, but it made me think of this movie. But what I really liked, right, we keep calling, you've referenced many times, the milk that androids have a tendency to leak out. They now call fuel blood, which I think is very interesting. I don't think we've ever had a name for the thing. So they're calling it fuel blood, which I thought was interesting. So as she was getting that fuel blood transfusion from all those surgical androids, at the same time this was happening, there's stuff going on at the Mithraic. I guess we're going to call it the Mithraic camp now, since they've essentially kicked the family out.
Yeah.
Some are living there, some are in lockup, and some are running around the planet trying to figure life out. But one thing that was interesting is he's torn by all this stuff about what he's supposed to do. And a part of it is the voices in his head. Every time he tries to ignore them, something happens. The voices said, keep Mother alive. He tried to kill her. He wound up, you know, having this weird knife fight with himself.
Right.
And stabbing himself. You know, so he goes to the shrine they have built and he asks for a sign. He's, I need a sign. What the heck's going on? And the shrine catches on fire, but it doesn't just light on fire. Campion is lighting it on fire from somewhere that Marcus can't see him.
Right.
Which I think that, right, that was another interesting dynamic, because they had been showing this, like, is it religion? Is it not? Are we misinterpreting things?
Right.
I mean, this was, right? Because if they don't show that scene, we go, holy crap, that thing just lit on fire. But it was Campion that lit the shrine on fire. And that was a really beautifully shot scene with Marcus kind of walking away, puts his arms kind of up in the air, and this shrine is on fire, just blazing. And, I'll say the movie that was There Will Be Blood, man, with Daniel Plainview and the burning one of the oil derricks that caught on fire, and that was it very much reminded me of that scene. And you know, the whole time that's happening, Marcus is laughing, right? And then it might come where they find out Campion's the one who lit it on fire, but then they go, yeah, but he lit it on fire right when I asked for a sign. Like,
right.
So is he just the one who delivered the message, you know, so that it can get
right
into some of that stuff. But I thought that was a really cool looking scene with that big fire and the silhouette. Oh, and 1917, remember we reviewed that? We talked about that scene too. And it was a very similar look to it, with a silhouetted body and these big giant fires.
Right.
I thought that was cool.
You know, while we're talking about everything that's going on at the Mithraic camp, the beginning of the episode, we see the first note I have is, it says episode 8, and then it says Marcus is crazy. Like, he's just really losing it, and they're taking, and it's so interesting. But that in that first scene, he's having a moment where now not only has he knife fought himself and shanked himself, but now he is trying to remove, he's cutting pieces of his scar off of his face, or he's
oh yeah,
doing this. And then all of a sudden he's peeling everything. And I was like, you know, it's funny, in episode 7, you had the poltergeist quote, but like, that's so poltergeist.
Yeah. 100% peeling his face off.
Oh my God.
All the way to the skull. And that was gnarly, gnarly looking.
Yeah, he's losing it. And then you've got, you're watching, like, not only is Marcus in this, like, twitchy kind of crazy mood, like, Sue and Paul are clearly walking on eggshells around him. And I feel like, you know, then there's this whole episode or this whole part where Marcus is talking to Paul about, he's like, I gotta show, like, you're too fragile and I have to show you how to be tougher and stronger because Soul's not going to take it easy on you kind of thing. It's a very tense scene. And then you've got growing tensions between Sue and Marcus. And so I think it's really interesting because for me, it really feels like they're taking with them, like, you've got like the two paths of a parent of like the one who had it really hard, like, there's several paths you can take, but like when you've grown up in like harsh conditions, I feel like oftentimes the two paths that are shown are you've got the one parent who had it hard and wants to make things better and easier on their kid and is like, I don't want you to have to go through what I went through. And then you could have that same, you could have a parent who goes through the same type of conditions and then is also like, well, the world's a hard place and you need to, like, this is what happened to me, so you need to learn from it too, kind of thing. Or like, this was good enough for me, it's going to be good enough for you. Like, I dealt with this, so you're going to be okay to deal with it, kind of path. And I feel like that's what they're kind of showcasing right now.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I feel like that's the dynamic in my house a little bit. I'm not saying I grew up with hardship. I'd say we were kind of more on the like lower middle class end of things. My wife, little higher up the food chain, and I had three siblings. She had a brother. My household, we just all have this expectation, just like, yeah, cool, you need that thing? Okay, go take care of it. Like, what are you telling me about your problems for? You know where the thing is. And that's me. Like, my kids, I'm very much in the, you need to be an independent thinker. You need to take care of things. My kids will ask, can you get this? Did you try it? Can you do it? Well, I don't know. Well, go try it. And then if you fail, you come let me know and I will help you. And if it's a thing I know you can do, you just do it. Although I'll say there's downfalls to that, you know, because now it's like you walk in and my kid's getting, you know, standing on the countertop, getting into the top cabinet and getting a glass jar of milk out. And dude, you're four. Like, I can help you with now they're too independent. But that's like,
my house too.
That's very much my, my kind of outlook as a parent is I try strongly to teach independence and things like that. So like, I kind of get where Marcus is coming from. He got crapped on, but I also think looking at it from like the leadership parable perspective, the Mithraic are soft, like they're soft. Like they are comfortable because they still have at least some level of resources. But once they start running out, like, these people are going to fall apart. And I think that's...
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's part of the parable of why he was chosen. The other thing I like, too, with, you know, he's going crazy. Like, if this is a parable, like, look at some of the biblical stories and, like, the stuff, right? Like, Noah, you know, in his ark, like, hey, dude, the world's going to flood and I need you to build this giant boat and we're going to put a ton of animals. It's going to be like a zoo, you know.
Right. Don't ask questions, just build it.
Everyone's like, what you build? And it's like, well, it's a big boat. There's this weird voice in my head. Like, you would totally look nuts, just like Marcus is. Like, so if you think of these parables in a more modern way, these people would look nuts. They'd look totally crazy. And part of them would be like, I'm not, oh, my God. Do you know how much time it would take me to build a boat that big? I don't even know how to build a boat. You know, like all those things would be. So they'd be fighting it. And so I think it's really cool how they're putting this parable aspect in. Whether, like you said, whether it is supernatural or whether it is some sort of eventual scientific explanation.
Yeah.
I think it makes it very interesting to see that kind of crazy. Because you're like, oh, man, all of them. All those people in the Bible that were like, you know, doing God's work, they would have looked nuts. They would have looked totally crazy. Yeah, these voices are telling me to do it. So, yeah, I'm doing it, you know?
Right.
So I think that's a pretty cool dynamic that they've put into the show.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. And and also, again, why is everyone seeing Tally?
What the hell, Tally? What are you doing?
Like, let us know already.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I like it. I like, I don't know. I'm intrigued to see where the season finale takes us. I hope they wrap up some things, but what we do know is season 2 has been approved. So we may have some bigger cliffhangers than we want on some of these things. So I'll be
good point.
Be interested to find out. A couple other things. What's interesting too, right? Marcus is telling Paul, I don't want you to be weak. I want you to be self-sufficient. It's going to be tough. Right. It's going to be hard. And then there's Campion, who was raised by father and mother, who, he's total badass. Like, we're finding out he's like, you know, he was jealous of Paul because of how smart he was.
Right.
I'll take a Campion 9 times out of 10. Listen, you can be the smartest dude in the world, but if you can't do stuff, you know what I mean? He knows how to survive, man. He literally dug a hole out of his – he dug a tunnel out of his imprisonment.
And not only dug a hole, he dug a hole with the skeleton hands of the creature that was
Yeah. He used the bones of his enemy to dig a hole. He's tough, man.
Well, you know what's interesting is the contrast between Paul and Campion. And when you look at them together, what a team they would be. Because you do need that stuff to balance out, right? Like you were saying, like, you need the, like, the nurturing of Sue and maybe some of that, like, not impulse, but, like, come on, we got to go. But you need the logistics and the rationality, too. So now with them, it's like, I mean, Paul built that crazy trap. He made things more efficient. But you're right. You don't, like, that trap only gets you so far if you don't have someone with the attitude and like the, just the energy that someone like Campion brings to the table. So you need all of that. Like it synergizes your survival.
Ooh, synergize. Yeah. Did you try to synergize your fridge?
No, I'm going to try that when we're done. I'm going to synergize it.
With your powers combined. he does something else that I'll get into that I thought was, we can tell this one and then move back to the mother story, right? Because then at the end, we do get Sue and Paul escaping. Mm-hmm. And Father is the one that goes after them. And then along with Sue and Paul are the other two children, girls, that come along with them. And then Father catches them. But... boom, pops up out of nowhere, Campion with his old-timey David versus Goliath slingshot.
Yes.
Which I also think was intentional, right? Whipping it around, and he pegs Father right in the head with a rock, and it doesn't really hurt him.
Right.
Right. But it causes blood fuel to spill out of his head a little bit, and Father kind of makes a little face and dabs it with his fingers the blood from his forehead. Blood fuel, rather.
Yeah.
As they escape. And part of that, I don't know, the way he kind of dabbed his head, too, it kind of made me think, like, did it knock some sense into him, you know? Did he have a little bit of a, oh, you know, like it kind of shocked him back into a little bit of father mode? We don't know. Yeah. We didn't really have much follow-up, but that's another element of Campion just being a badass. And then he just goes, this way, folks, you're coming with me. And they run to escape. But let's bounce back to Mother, and I'll let you kind of take charge because she's having the discussion with the surgical android and explaining her problem. So we didn't really – I just talked about her stealing their fuel blood.
Right, and it's – it's awesome. It is a great conversation. Like she's having this conversation with this android who has been put on the ship with other ones to not only service and repair other androids, but also be a surgical android. Very Star Wars for humans too. And so she's having this, and she's kind of having this whole conversation about like her feelings, and the android keeps being like, hey, you don't have to do that to just have conversation with me. Like, why are you injecting emotions into this? And she was like, sometimes like she makes a comment like, me and my partner started to have impulses that were not dictated by programming. And this android cannot wrap his head around that. Like, it was like, no, that's not how this works. And then, yeah. And then they're having a great discussion. And I can't remember, I wrote this line down. I don't remember the exact subject they were, but she was talking about things, and the android was disagreeing with her and was like, you don't really mean that, you don't really know that, or something. And mother says, you only know what you've been programmed to believe. And the android looked at her and is like, and you as well. And she kind of like, and I was like, I just thought that was really cool for them to place in the middle of the episode. Because again, even in looking at like atheist versus religious zealot, like, it's the same thing, right? Like, where in our lives are we believing something we've been programmed to believe is the right way or the absolute truth? So I thought that was really cool that the androids were having that conversation. But while they're having this conversation, they're trying to repair mother, and she's got something, a growing discomfort in her abdomen, which is why she sought out the android in the first place. And he's like, well, maybe it's congealed fuel blood, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Reach in and see. She takes one of her eyes out to kind of look around. She's like, oh my gosh. She reached into her abdomen and is like, something moved, and reaches in there. And it turns out there's a growing mass that appears to be some form of embryo. Mother, the android, is pregnant. And this was always to be her mission. There's a very interesting scene where she starts to plug into the Mithraic matrix to go back to Campion Sturgis, her creator, and kind of be like, what the F, like, what's going on here? And he's like, this was always the mission. You're going to be the mother of the new species, or like the new Earth. And she's not happy about it. It's very interesting. What do you think?
Yeah. And, you know, you've seen my notes. So I write notes as I watch the show. So it was very early on. She's like, I have a growing discomfort in my abdomen. And I was like, she pregnant? What is this a thing?
I know, it's great.
And then it's, you know, they don't directly say it, but it's very heavily implied that she has a growing life form of some sorts inside of her. And we don't, obviously we need more exposition to understand the how, the why, the what, and all that stuff. But early on, when we see Campion Sturgis reprogramming her, he said, you're the hope for humanity. You're the mother of all humanity, is what he said to her. And so, you know, we thought that was starting the little settlement that they had there on Kepler 22b. Excuse me. But it was more than just that, right? It was that she's pregnant. It's not just the kids that she took with her. And maybe that was just kind of a trial run to see how you were. I don't know. It was very,
right.
Yeah, it was very interesting, because that's, we did not predict that mother would be pregnant on the last episode.
No, you certainly did not. And I've got a lot of questions like, how did this happen? Like, did this happen through virtual sex? Like, I'm very confused. I like to know how this came to be.
Yeah. So,
and it seems like mother would also kind of like to know how this came to be.
So you're saying when she plugged into the Mithraic matrix, as we're calling it, and she got it on with Campion Sturgis in the virtual world,
right,
that she got real world android knocked up?
Yeah, or is she the android version of the Virgin Mary? She's the android version of Mary.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then I think it brings into some of it, because it's a lot of prophetic this, prophetic that, the prophet. Marcus is convinced he's the chosen one. He thought it was Paul. They thought it might be Campion. Now he thinks he's it. And now we're like, is he it? Is she it? Is mother it? Huh?
They're really playing the whodunit. Like, who's the prophet?
Yeah, it's very, very mysterious. In all this, too, Tempest actually finds Mother. She seeks her out, runs away, and Mother kind of chases her off. But it's more timing than anything in Mother's defense.
It's bad time for her. You're right. She doesn't really have a lot of emotional bandwidth right now.
She just found out she was pregnant, which, you know, she didn't think was possible. So much like when my wife told me during the beginning of COVID that we're having another child. I was like, this is not possible. No, I guess it is possible.
Yeah, right? Like, well, this ultrasound says different. Well, and you know, okay, there's a whole other thing. Like, okay, if I'm going to be really honest, I don't know how I feel about Mother being pregnant. Like, I don't know how, I'm like, obviously I'm going to ride it out and I am like interested to see the show, but I'm not like, I'm not super pumped about this storyline. Like, I'm not like, yeah, I'm like, this is weird. And then on top of it, she's having like cravings and like, she's acting very animalistic. Like, she's having cravings for like blood, human blood, or not human blood.
Well, that's and blood. I thought part of that was that she was actually using the some of the elements in human blood to replicate the blood fuel, the white milk that's in them. I thought that's what the craving was, since she lost some because she got, you know, she got stabbed with an, or hacked with an axe thing and lost quite a bit. And maybe that's not what it was. That's how I interpreted it. But it was like a freaky scene when it was happening, where she's drinking this blood, IVing, you know, even just taking it from the androids was kind of a gnarly. That scene was gnarly looking, because you have all these like ripped up surgical androids, you know, you think it's probably from the actual crash of the ship, but they're just like these humanoid-ish android bodies everywhere, and she's just like hooked up to an IV to them.
Like,
it was a really cool looking scene, but with that storyline, I'm okay with it. I find it intriguing, but I'm okay with it because like they didn't show inside of her stomach and it looked like a human embryo. It was like a black ball thing. So
like a mini Fifth Element.
Yeah. So I wonder what that is. Is it android? Is it this weird combination of mechanical, biological, where, you know, when she was like acting as mother to the original children, where she had all the tubes hooked up to the embryos, you know, they somehow got some biological DNA mixed with this this thing inside of her that would then develop into something. Like, I think there's a scientific way they can explain it. I don't like the idea of it as this, like, she's an android giving birth, because Saul, like, that would bother me. But if they can, like, science-ish explain it, I'm okay with it, I guess.
Very Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, that movie's awesome too.
So good.
As far, well, you have anything else on that episode? I think we kind of.
No, I just was. It was that with like the blood. I mean, again, most of my notes were Marcus is crazy. Is Marcus a full blown convert now? Is Mother pregnant? There were a lot of question marks in my notes. No, I think that pretty much covers it. There was a lot in those two episodes.
Yeah.
Very interesting how they kind of played it like Mother's not very excited to be Carrie, which is interesting. This is the only other thing I was going to say. She spent how long in the previous episodes telling Tempest how lucky she was to be carrying and creating life, and that all she'd ever be was a creation. And now here she is creating life and has it, and she's real pissed about it.
Yeah.
So and, I think this is an interesting take.
Yeah, and I think it's pushing that envelope on the emotions. And she, I feel like this is the first time she's really acknowledged they were moving beyond their programming in some ways. So I thought that.
Yeah.
And I think as far as like acting on this episode, it's really Mother and Marcus who are the stand. They're the ones that got, and I would throw Sue in there too. She, those are the three kind of pulling the weight emotionally, right? Mother's going through this weird transformation. Marcus is going through this transformation. Sue's kind of stuck in the middle of Marcus's transformation, and she's more just chock full of rage and ready to go, ready to take care of Paul and get out of there. And now we've got some separation. You got Marcus with the Mithraic at base camp. You have Mother out there figuring things out. And then you have Sue with some of the kids out there on their own. So I'm very much intrigued to see where the next next couple episodes take us, because next week is going to be our last episode for this season. We know there's going to be a second season, so we'll be able to talk when that comes out. But any of the other acting things that popped out to you? I mean, to me, those were the three heavyweights.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you on that.
All right. And under real world implications, I just wrote a pregnant android. I don't know. I do like how they're really, unfolding like an onion layer by layer, this, transformation the androids are going through. I kind of like what they did to Father when they reprogrammed him, but they're like, maybe he's evolved too much for that. And that's what I think is going to happen. I also did see the picture, for the art for the next episode. And it was a picture of Father carrying Mother. So I think he's going to, get back to being Father, and they're going to form a super team again.
Yeah.
But I think this show's going to season. I think it's going to end with everybody having to team up for something against something.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to I know HBO has played around with limited series, and they haven't done a great job with that because they keep adding seasons to it. So they'll and I don't know if this is one of those where it was supposed to be a limited series, and then they were like, no, it's got such great, like, because Big Little Lies, The Young Pope, and I thought there was another one that were supposed to be limited series, meaning like one season, 10 episodes. Was this one of those?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think the writer has a pretty big storyline planned out. I think he's got it planned out from listening to the interviews.
Okay. All right. That's cool then. All right.
I think it's like anything else though. We got to see the success of the first little bit before we.
Sure.
Because there's no way. This has got to be an expensive show. I mean, I've not looked the budget up, but it's expensive. It's gorgeous. And there's lots of cool sci-fi things and not lots of effects. They do pretty subtle effects, but it's got to be a pretty pricey one. And they're going to wait till they get into their big next, epic. And I think this could be something that does turn out to be more epic in scope, and starting kind of at the small, little, more intimate level.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm super excited for the last two episodes. Film influences. What did you see? What did you get?
Okay, the biggest one that stood out to me. You're so good with the film influences with these, because I get so wrapped up into the story, I stop being able to like kind of pick up on a lot of the film influences. So I know you've got a lot. For me, the biggest one that popped out was the scene where Mother and the creature have a showdown, and she ends up on her back and the creature's on top of her and is nearing its teeth.
Oh yeah.
and drooling, and I was like, yes, alien. It was perfect.
Yeah. I thought the same thing, and I never even wrote it down. Because as soon as you said it, I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't even write that down.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I would, I don't know what movie, well, I'm interested to hear what you're going to say, but the surgery and the surgical androids, they had almost like a pan, like a Guillermo del Toro, like feel to them. Like they could be.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, absolutely. They, man, he's so good at that kind of creature feature, part animatronic, part costume.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I could see that.
Mm-hmm. That was it.
Okay, so the episode 7, Marcus and Mother. Man, that was straight up Silence of the Lambs. That was Clarice Starling meeting Hannibal Lecter. Except I don't think we thought Marcus was as susceptible as Clarice. Who's a very young new detective man, but Mother was Hannibal Lecter through and through. She chewed him up and spit him out with just using words.
Yeah.
And she like knew everything that was just talking to him for a few minutes. She figured out everything that was going to grind into him. Mm. So to me, it was very much that scene from Silence of the Lambs. You mentioned the alien one. I think those androids, I got a couple for the surgical androids. I think there was a Star Wars feel to it too.
Yeah.
Where it's just these androids who, right. We've been used to seeing more humanoid, humanistic, very realistic seeming androids. Whereas like the robots in Star Wars are just like, they're robots, but they have all like unique personalities. And that's what the surgical robot, he felt like a robot with a unique personality.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a C-3PO-ish.
Yeah, but he didn't feel like mother and father or any of the other androids we've met on the show.
Right.
So that's where I got Star Wars. But also just that whole scene, the way it looked, and it's been years since I've seen that, but my head immediately went to the cartoon Heavy Metal. Like, just, it's like this ripped apart ship. There's like steam. There's just metal parts everywhere. There's robots ripped out, so it's sort of gory, but it's sort of not because the robots. But that whole scene where she was wired up and all that, like, absolutely reminded me of Heavy Metal. And so, like I said, I don't know if there's a direct scene. I just think the artwork from that very much made me think of that.
I can see that.
The scene where the shrine was on fire, I mentioned There Will Be Blood. Marcus with silhouette, it absolutely reminded me of that. And here's a random one. It was with the blood eating scene. Just like you said, she turned very animalistic.
Yeah.
How she was approaching it. And I was like, it reminded me of a vampire movie, you know? And I couldn't like, I'm like, what vampire movie does it remind me of? And honestly, because she was like kind of animalistic about it, it reminded me of the vampires from 30 Days a Night.
You know,
very animalistic vampires. They're not the Dracula, the charming, and really just any movie where you have these more animalistic, violent type of vampires. That's what that scene was reminding me of big time. My head immediately went vampire. I even wrote that at first. I was like, is she a vampire?
I know. I was confused. What's happening? So what's funny is that for me, that whole aspect reminded me not of a movie, but of a book that I read when I was in, I don't know, junior high, probably, while you were learning to eat solids.
just for the record, folks, she's like 4 years older. She's like not.
Right. It's just a joke.
She's using her walker, you know. And
yeah, exactly. We joke around. There's quite an age gap between the couple of us at the top, and then more of you guys are at the bottom. The best part about it, anyone who's listening, is the youngest member of the podcast group in the front row does the classics. Brandon is the youngest in Earth years, but he's got an old soul. love him for it. So this really reminded me of that aspect of mother and like the animalistic instincts where all of a sudden she's trying to get blood, kind of smelling, seeming like she's got an urge. There was a book I read by, you know, you had R.L. Stine and then you had Christopher Pike, and Christopher Pike was more of the like teen horror-ish books. And so it was a Christopher Pike book named Monster, in which this girl basically somehow like got infected with alien DNA, and like the whole book she's like morphing into a monster, and she has like a greater and greater animalistic drive to eat raw meat and drink blood and all this stuff as the book goes on. So like that's what it brought me to, and there's probably very few people who've read that book, but if you did, you know what I'm talking about.
Good deal. Well, I'm excited for our last episode, and can't wait to dig in on that. But you got any plugs for this month?
Oh my gosh. Well, if any of you are on the Front Row Network's main page, you see for October, we've got MonsterCast, ton of stuff going on. There's something for everybody out in MonsterCast. Us ourselves on Flashbacks, we are doing The Shining. We're teaming up with Brandon from Classics and doing The Shining. And then we're also going to do The Craft, the 1996 movie. And also, I believe we're tying that in with the show that's coming up. I don't know if it's, is it a reboot? Is it a sequel? It's kind of.
I think it's a sequel.
Okay.
It's a sequel. It's hard to tell because it looks very similar to the first one, but I have a feeling there'll be some explanation to some of that.
Yeah. You're probably right. So we've got that going up in October. And if, you know, I mean, like I said, there's something for everybody in the Front Row Network in October for MonsterCast. So check it out. What about you? Do we have anything else going on that I missed?
No, but I'll throw out, we did just drop our Return of the Living Dead episode, which was one of the most fun episodes I think we've done. I had a blast talking about that movie because it's so great. I'm very excited. Very excited for that. And then, you know, just keep an eye out. You know, if you like horror movies, like she said, we're killing it this month. We're going to have an hopefully early-ish release timed with the election of the American president for November.
Nice.
The Front Row Flashbacks. So, Aaron Sorkin having a moment right now, got a West Wing, reunion special coming out, and he's got a movie that I can't remember the name of, starring Sacha Baron Cohen. So, there's some good stuff that will tie into that, but, you can always find our main podcast feed, the Front Row Network, on Facebook. You can subscribe to our feed, Front Row Flashbacks, on Spotify or whatever you use to access your podcast. We can be found on NPR Illinois' website under the Community Voices tab. And you can always follow us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with the Z. You can find our Patreon on the Front Row Network's Facebook page. So if you like this, we got tons of stuff like it and more available if you want to become a full-time patron. You can also find the Front Row Flashbacks podcast Facebook page. That's a heck of a name. But you can request to join there and join us for more discussions. But once again, thanks for hanging out with us. We got one more episode coming up. We'll talk the season finale. And until then, we'll see you all in the front row.
Just like love will do.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z.